Okay. Mark Goldman. Well, yeah, Mark. You're here somewhere, I know. Feed the meter, okay. Chris Michaels. Come on up, Chris. Chris, I'm just going to hand you the microphone. I think it's better to hold it.
Finding where the light is, and I also got a $30 ticket after going out 5 minutes after I'd come in, and he'd already written the ticket. And no, that was two weeks ago. Yeah, I guess it was the first week of it, and then I got another one 2 days later. But I've got my hearing, so I will go down and talk my best. I'd like to read two short poems tonight in memory of my husband, Dick Michaels. And one is a poem early in our 20-year marriage. And this was published in The Exchange, if anybody remembers that wonderful journal that Chris Telfer edited for a number of years. This is called Smooth Sailing. You're the centerboard, pinning the broad hull in waters which riffle with waves across the lake. You know there's safety in lying low, content to dream in indigo light. I long to run up the mast, bare skin to sun and breeze, fill with a full wind. When it drops, I lie listless. We circle to find the right tack. Hands meet on the tiller. This is one of the last ones, and I decided I'm only riding buses now. I park my car where there's no parking at all. I have to think about and get the bus in. So, and as you usually do when you read your poems, you know, you start revising them. So on the bus, I was busily saying, oh, why did I put that like that? So I'll see if I can see it. It's called The Gift. I fold a dampened face cloth, smooth it on your forehead, shoulders and head listing, though bolstered by pillows to ease your breathing. Muscle by muscle closing down, sheets soaked with perspiration, yet still the heart beats, pulse steady. You remind me of Michelangelo's Pieta. I am Mary, the mother, who, I am Mary the mother who grieves a death, wants to receive her son into her arms. I am the Magdalene who repents, believing he will deny death the ultimate victory. I believe with sorrow memories resurrect, vibrant as when we created them. I believe in your abiding presence, strength for the work still to do. Thank you.
Did Michael Goldman get back in here yet? Come on, Mike. Oh, I'm sorry. I'm looking at Michael's name right here. That's kind of Mark Goldman.
Sorry, Mike.
The two poems I'd like to read are kind of out-of-towner poems. The first one, when I read it at the Poetry Exchange, at the Pittsburgh Poetry Exchange, I mentioned Yankees, and of course the guys ganged up on me for not mentioning using the Pirates in the poem, but I do mention Honus Wagner in here, so. It is a poem possibly in search of a title. It's either a Dragon Slayers or a Lady Guinevere. If there had been no dragons to slay, we would have invented them so we could delight in heroes and myths, Just as we invented the Louisville slugger, so Honus Wagner and Ty Cobb could hit one out of the park. In the kingdom of Camelot, if there had only been a single dragon to slay, we would have protected the sport, instituting little and minor leagues. Someone would have stepped up to the plate. If there had been no dragons to slay, what of fair maidens, Lady Guinevere? I would have fought as vigorously for you and requested a reward, sitting beside you at the fair or accompanying you to the ball. Return with me to my century, a duel of blazing bats. Down 3-1, in the 5th game of the series, the Yankees at home in the Bronx. I'll take you out to the ballpark. We'll share a dog and beers. Then, if without blushing, in the 7th inning stretch, you would gaze upon me, hug me, and call me Slugger. Guinevere, to hell with dragon slayers. If it were the bottom of the 9th and we were down by a single run, a warm breeze in the late spring sun, exhaling fiery words, I would suit up for you, take the first pitch, and drive the next one out of the park. The next one is also in this out-of-towner note. This is a river. It's the Mississippi, not one of our three rivers. There's a little history behind this. The company I work for has 3 barges on the Mississippi waiting to come up the Mississippi to go on to the Ohio. And with the torrential rains and the flooding on the Mississippi, the barges can't move. So that's what's happening on the Mississippi. But it's based on having read and really loved the adventure of Huckleberry Finn. River. A map has precision. It's perfect, its towns and farmland permanent, until a river overflows its banks. Topography falters. I lose ground to mud. I'm not well suited to handle sliding down muddy banks, water now up to my waist. I've deluded myself, thinking you were an ally. You're my adversary. Sandbags are temporary. And as for you, Huck Finn, you're a damn fool, and so am I. I would never have succumbed to the safety of any boyhood adventure on the river if I thought the river could rob Missouri, robbed by the hands of the wild river. The levee isn't holding in Hannibal. Dare you crest more than 13 feet above flood stage? Residents are vacating their homes. The Mississippi overwhelms me. My knees give way. I can no longer mark the places where I stood. They no longer exist. I'm afraid we've lost a friend, Huck. It was you and I and the river. We were traveling companions. Thank you.
Thank you, Mark. Oh, yeah, we're still getting feedback. The next reader is Lewis Collier.
I have no book out as of yet, so I'm relegated to 2. But first of all, I just want to thank Renee Alberts, Carnegie Library. My good friend, Mr. Wentworth, have left. But I want to just say this, is that when I was growing up in Ohio, this guy moved next door to us, and I think he knew everything in the world. If you asked him anything, he just knew it. One day he said something to me. He said, Lewis, do you realize if you go to the library that you can go anywhere in the world without ever leaving home? And I thought that was so strange. I was like, You just go to the library and you go anywhere in the world? He goes, no. You have to get books about people around the world. And then you can learn all their customs. And so from that point on, I grew up being in love with the library. And I spent mostly my summers as a kid coming up going to the libraries. I believe very much in the Carnegie Library of Pittsburgh. If you go to YouTube, I sent a video out to Harrisburg, to Washington, D.C., to all our representatives here in the city. And the video is called Harrisburg State House Blues. So if you look that up on YouTube, and I've been committed to the libraries since I was a kid. What happened to me as a kid from this same man, I told him I had to write a limerick for school, but I couldn't get it out the book. I had to make it up. So he said, well, let's make it up. I said, well, how are you going to make it up? He goes, Lewis, you make it up the same way they made it up and put him in other books. I'm like, But anyways, I did that limerick, and I received an A on it. And I took that thing home and showed it to my parents. And my mother looked at it, and she looked at it. And she looked at me and said, let me tell you something, boy. You better not be made this up. She was talking about the A. But anyways, from that point on, I said, wait a minute. You can get an A for writing? Well, that's been it for me. That's been it. You can get an A for writing. So I'm going to stick to the program. I'm going to do the two. And being around Mr. Wentworth at the library, I decided I would try to tackle some haiku for a while. And hopefully I'm getting that point there. So if you'll let me do these two short haikus, I got a humorous piece I like to do. I grew up in this area, I told you, in Ohio. And as far as in the summer, when you looked out, you could see nothing but dandelions. So I grew up liking dandelions. I picked them, put them in vases, all that kind of stuff. Oh, dandelion, why are you not a flower like the yellow rose? Condolence for the deceased flower at the grave, no eulogy said. This last piece, if you permit me, is kind of half true and half made up, but this is called an adult bedtime story. There's a mouse in my house. There's a mouse in my house. There's a mouse in my house, the frightened lady said to the man. The man said to the frightened lady that had the mouse in her house, we must come with a plan for the mouse that's in your house. The lady with the mouse in her house said to the man, you should stay the night. The lady with the mouse in her house said, you should stay the night. A mouse is such a fright. So the man stayed the night with the lady that had a mouse in her house to keep her from fright. He turned out the lights and whispered good night to the mouse that he had let into the lady's house.
Thank you, Lewis. All right, Jason Baldinger.
I do have a book. I am remiss, though. I only brought one copy of said book, so I'll be refereeing wrestling matches in the back after we're done. This is Jason. This is Jason. I wrote this with Jerome Crooks, by the way. Yes, this is a split book called The Whiskey Rebellion, available in lots of fine independent booksellers here in the city of Pittsburgh, and maybe some other places, too. So here's two short poems for you. I won't read anything from that because they're all about Hiawatha length. First one is called Holy Ghost. It's for a man named Amir who told me this story. 1958. Kids growing up in Cleveland live on streets that border black neighborhoods, live on streets that border Polish neighborhoods, and they all go to school together. They all get along. No thoughts to Keller. No thoughts of Keller. Summertime. Summertime is just different. Nobody goes into somebody else's neighborhood unless you're looking for a fight. Not because you're black, not because you're Polish, just because it's turf, space. Space in the city. Huh. So these kids, these black kids, sneak down early morning, Friday morning, sneaking down before them Polish kids would rise and shine and catch these black kids who are trying to get a donut or a scone or maybe a bear claw, and then they'd hightail it back to their home turf. Shortcuts through the park, neutral turf, you can't see what's invisible. On the way back, those kids, those black kids, not Polish kids, straddling the imaginary line of space-time continuums and man-made boundaries, know, oh, they know their home's safe, safe when they see Albert Ayler, perched between the brownstones, between black and Polish neighborhoods, honking and squealing and wailing and wailing and squealing and honking. And honking and honking and wailing and loving the echo, the bounce back reverberation mixed with horns and traffic, sounds of city sounds and sounds of sounds and sounds of breaking glass and the sounds of rocks pelting walls by thrown by Polish kids who hated all that fucking noise and the sounds of men telling old ladies to shut up and the sounds of crowds closing in and the sounds collected as sounds into one universal sound, and it's the sound of Keller and the sound of freedom and the sounds of Keller and the sound of Kellers. And it was cosmic. It was cosmic. Albert took no note of anything but sound, and it was cosmic. Round there, folks called him the Holy Ghost. This next one is called Sarah Ann. Sarah Ann, your eyes are a bend in the creek from which we can see all the way to Charleston. Sarah Ann, for you I want nothing more than to buy a parcel of land and settle into a quiet life riding tractors in circles. Sarah Ann, the years are nothing more than your grandmother's plastic trinkets, my father's cufflinks, and wedding rings. Sarah Ann, on Saturday nights we'll build a church just to burn it down. Sarah Ann, on Sunday mornings we can worship in the corner bar of our choice. Sarah Ann, when the supermarket folds we can live on fish our children catch in their teeth. Sarah Ann, the post office is a trailer park. Our mail is Pony Express. Sarah Ann, will you sign my disability checks, dotting your I's with little suns, hearts, and flowers? Sarah Ann, in the lights of tipples, we can see their blinking as a shield to keep planes away. Sarah Ann, with the sun nested in your hair and your wrist brace and your can of Diet Coke, you will be forever 19. Sarah Ann, on summer nights we can move the TV to the front porch and watch until well after dark. Sarah Ann, the dog is dead. We buried him on the far side of the road. Sarah Ann, God is dead. We move like locusts through here. Thank you.
Let me see your book. Yes, I do. The Whiskey Rebellion. I'll tell you, these guys, Jason and Jerome, I read the book. Great stuff, man. You guys are really sharp. I like it. Thank you. All right. Thank you very much. All right. Ready here now. Let's see. Dan Shapiro, where you at? Are you going to be reading? Barry, are you going to read tonight? That's all right. I'll call you next.
Okay. Max von Sydow goes shopping at IKEA, Stockholm, 1994. That's the title. Cashing in on the perks of an advertising gig, he imagines what $5,000 worth of furniture would look like in granddaughter's home. The gent who played chess with death now faces a difficult decision, Poang versus Pello. He remembers assembling each chair. Elapsed time video compiled to show that it was so simple, even the brooding foil of Bergman could build it. He knows what Lafitte Rothschild can do to birch veneers, what lost Cabernet can do to man's lifespan. Ah, piss, he figures. She'll take 6 Extorp Jennylunds in Brunflo Red, their removable, machine-washable covers, a must-have for Swedish mommies always on the go. Gently lowering his lanky 65-year-old frame into an Isunda Gray Karlstad, he recalls the closure of the Virgin Springs tour, who blindsided his daughter's murderers in an easy, clean release. And my second one and last. Brian Wilson begins to compose Good Vibrations outside Dripping Cave, California in 1966. Every spring, he chastises Mike Love for bringing him here. They have it all wrong, Wilson says. It's always wrong. He points out errant harmonies, atonalities, how the olive warbler's two-note ambulance phrase belongs elsewhere, separated from that of the Tohi, a monotone specialist like that newcomer, Nico, but an octave higher. He would make the marsh wren sit out, its chick chicka chicka chicken scratch a bit too James Brown for the setting. He waits for sage thrashers to rest a measure as they prattle like old ladies under hair dryers. Only the kingbird, with its metallic treble, approximates adequacy. But wait. Amid a drumroll trill of wings, a star emerges in the hermit thrush, which Wilson hadn't identified on previous visits. He likens himself to Hammond uncovering Holiday, basking in that untapped ache, that signature phrasing. Wilson now cries out, commanding the singing to start over, to open with a hush of hermit thrushes, four of them. Then the kingbirds must come in, with purple finches on background vocals. "You're still not getting it, Mike," Wilson whines while unfolding a crumpled piece of staff paper, eyeing five lines on which to color the pictures of birds.
Okay, Daniel. Barry Governor, next.
I have one. It's a little long. It's still not Hiawatha. All right. Okay. You and me, Michael, we're in this together. Orange. This is dedicated to steelworkers in Pittsburgh and Mon Valley. Really, steelworkers in the United States. Orange. Pours from the furnace into the pigs. August suns, boiler makers. Rolled sleeves expose first degree burns, marks from cables that whip without warning. Instinct chains pull free of their loads, dance strangely till steel strikes bone. Forehead bandanas absorb salt, till drop by drop, it runs to the brow, overruns the lid, stings the wincing eye, then stings again. The first finger knuckle of a greasy glove diverts the channel, but the salt finds its way. Whiskey, look out! Boilermakers. Imperial pressed to parched lips. Fire in the hole doused by Iron City suds. Spilled draft slides over greased Union cotton, wraps blackened fingers and falls from the counter to steel-toed boots. There is no sign of sweat rivulets left to run their courses when the whistle blew. John, give me a chance to top that 203. If I'm caught one more time, my ass is grass. Where's Towhead? He's stoking 4-12. Looking, he said, looking at that rippled roof. Ragged rust holes, straight sunbeams. Yeah, but I need a partner. I gotta go. Tell Whiskey when he gets here. The train's low rumble rolls up the valley, then quiets. Orange. Slag tongues poured to the mon, boil night waters to steam and thunder. Up track, gantry cranes rattle on worn rails. The Bessemers boom and roar. At 4 a.m., brown-bagged rye outside the building. Grass. Worn muscle rests on corrugated steel. After the whistle blows, orange. Pours from the furnace into the pigs. Pours from the furnace into the pigs. August suns, just breaking the horizon.
Thank you, Barry. Still get a good read on that. The next poet is my buddy Paul. Come on up here.
Good evening. Two poems. Hey you, at peace, the voice given odd longitude. Aloha is hi and or Bukowski. Full day kindergarten, maps backward, spam. We are not interesting. That's a job. Fame versus fortune, ringside, Muscatel. Last poem could be found in a wallet, I guess. It's titled Absurd Latex. Huh. Palinesque as scrimshaw on a kumquat. Hirsutism that overcame bubble wrap. They could pole dance at some bar during Lent. Low hung fruit, candidate for reduction, to wonder how often things need garlic.
Thank you, Paul. Okay, let me see where we're at. Okay, Andrew Sidlick. Come on, Andy.
Thank you, Joan and Jimmy, for the chance to read at open mic. And these two poems were done through the Pittsburgh Poetry Exchange Workshop. As Joan pointed out, many people have gone. So thank you, Michael, for heading that up and have made these better poems. This first one is called The Unexpected Dog. Walk in November darkness alongside the crawl of rush hour traffic. Plastic bags swing, fur and claws in front of my feet. The unexpected dog interrupts my progress. I yell for it to stop, but off the sidewalk it leaps. The horn beeps. Between breaths it yelps. The machine does not slow it down. Gone into an alley on the other side. I drop my bags, wonder if I should run to see whether that yellow blur, or was it tan or white, is bleeding to death at the end of that alley. Even though it seemed okay, part of me needs to know. The other part picks up my groceries, follows the driver. We are machines dragged by the night into home as usual. Seem to write a lot about animals, probably write about them more than people. This one is called King of the Sea. Dead eyes stare up at the newlyweds, smirking mouth, limb-like fins. Raja Laut, says the fisherman, King of the Sea, I give half off for American friends. A fish caught in time, its stink rising in the heat, mixing with shouted prices, men with brown skin, mosques, and mountains. Can't be, he thinks, not the one thought extinct for 65 million years, not the coelacanth. Her scientist's fingers dare scales that glitter like armor, like bullets set in its skin, she says, but it feels so soft. Click of the camera eye captures it. They move on. Accidental exposure darkens into regret. You left it behind? Shouts the man from the museum. They offer a modest reward, and another is brought to them, barely alive. Iris is milky. They wade beyond shallow water. Blood trails past the reefs. Red ribbon of history. They sink with it into the deep. Green luminescence stirs in its eyes. Graceful fanned fins calling to their minds the flouncing skirts of Spanish dancers. It spirals towards bottom, head against sand. Their hearts break. Thank you.
Thank you, Andrew. Joe Caldon. Joey, where you at?
This one's called Imagine Her. Imagine her, a daffodil after the springtime rain. And for you, a season arrives, unfiltered light. Put away your cherished winter jacket. Thank you.
Gerard?
Thanks, everybody, for staying and waiting. I'll try to be brief. Everything, everyone, energy that night, so blah. Get raw, without rhymes. After I finish, my mind's blank. Not like that nirvanic emptiness bliss, but the afterthoughts following sex with someone who's not your lover. I can respect honesty from whatever source, whether miss or not understood. Personal work is the most intimidating to undertake, but I find solace in knowing all our graves have the same depth. And rolling off the tongue of my mind is breath. Relax in this large group of unnecessary, stressful energy. I need to give this a rest. It's not about how I want to hear the sounds I make. It's about saying what I want to say. Compact, intact, there I go again, off track. What it is I'm trying to say is, I'm scared, fucking terrified. I mean, tormented by confusion. My life pre-9/11 consisted of simple pleasures of peace. Post-9/11, my coming of age has been marked by the global war on terror that defines my kind as a domestic threat and works to instill fear in all kinds of hearts and minds. I fear y'all's complacency in this matter complicitly enables them to take me away. No trial, no justice. Fucking right I'm frustrated. It should ooze off of me. I am it. I encountered other worlds in the jungles of Peru where I met my inclinations and reaffirmed my learning through ayahuasca that tells me loving me equals loving you. But my heart's weak and I'm too damn young to have a bleak outlook and little hope. This tyrannical fascism creeps ever closer to my home in the woods, and all I want to do is cure our disease with one line, one word, one poem. I'm addicted to the effort, but the drugs barely help me. In fact, they seem to keep my closest friends at bay. I could quit, but what difference would it make in a world of low blows where you get knocked down immediately after getting high? How do I get by? Hide. Remain anonymous. Take advice from strangers. They always seem to know me best. The rest is shit. Manure. Good for the flowers and worms. No longer natural or free-flowing, this shit will cost you $9.05 without tax. With taxes, it costs the lives of humans in Yemen, Libya, Afghanistan, Iraq, Pakistan, Pennsylvania, anywhere where opposition is found. Resistance movements to this state, this bloated empire, this arrogant atrocity posing as a benevolent government have forced the willing slaves of spirit underground. Am I the only one who senses the silence as bombs hit buildings containing babies? This is reality, people. Are we real enough to handle it? Or should I too join in the feigning and faking, fighting back so I can continue to feel good? Well, at least okay about the current chaos of affairs out of which will rise a new order. What can I do about it? What's the tangible, pragmatic strategy here? If this is it, I'll stop worrying and learn to love the fact we're fucked. Despair might also be a black hole, 6 feet deep. So I'll drive cars, file in lines, go to church, join a community group, watch TV, live the lie that this standard operating consciousness of mindless routine is the best one there is. Is there only one is? I question if our neurochemistry was altered to allow perceptions of other dimensions to seep in, how would we react? Could we accept that money and time are just illusions? They are what we make of them? I seem to be out of both, broke and free. It's music, well, people that best relate to me. And in his advice, echoed Saul, telling me to talk to strangers, but listen too, when family fails and friends lead me astray. His wisdom tripped me out, even though it was my own, he was the one who said it out loud. Shit, I knew right then that I'd have to pen the truth of parts of me that I once tried to fight. I'd embrace what once I turned away and give my blindness sight. It words the way I walk, so now I end with what began a week of light, the language of love that led me through narrow paths to open spaces. These lines move in circles. Thank you, Paul. God's graces.
Thank you, Jared. Okay, do we miss anybody else out here yet? Okay. Bob Ziller, come on up here. Bob has a book he wants to sell, and he's a cool guy. Let's
see. Requiem. Ozymandias. TV talking, head in sand. Plumes of smoke, discarded hands. Muted. Thick black sea, techno slaughter, confetti, birds diving to death. Postcard. I stayed for a month in Changsha, in the Sichuan province, about a mile from the Yangtze River. I live with a young couple, Shen and Nachi, and their 7-year-old daughter, Li. Several times, Li and I spent entire days fishing together at the riverside. We would leave the house at dawn and return at sunset, walking hand in hand, carrying the bamboo poles with the fish in a yellow bucket. On the morning I was to leave, at the table as we finished breakfast, Li gave me a silver pocket watch. I'll always remember that moment, her smile, her eyes. I've actually never been to China. Ladies and gentlemen, I hold in my hands the last poem. The last poem will be sung by a sobbing nightingale beneath the famous moon. The last poem will have a frog jump into it. The last poem will make diamonds out of coal. The last poem will feature superheroes of the soul. The last poem will dance on the banks of the River Thames and take a lobster for a walk. The last poem will juggle coconuts. The last poem shall be compared to a summer's day. The last poem will be recycled and sold as rolling papers at the neighborhood bodega. The last poem will be handcuffed for having too much fun. The last poem will have breasts like cantaloupes. The last poem will feel the sap rise in its loins. The last poem will have an afterglow like deer tracks in the freshly fallen snow. The last poem will dream that it's a butterfly, then sit in the lotus posture and disappear. The last poem, disguised as a cherub wearing diapers, will fill all the holes in the ozone layer. The last poem will save the rainforest, then get a star on Hollywood Boulevard. The last poem will weep on a battlefield strewn with corpses. The last poem will be destroyed by religious fascists. The last poem will be memorized by the ghost of Homer. The last poem will be scrawled on the stall of a public bathroom, and it will say, "I wrote this to make asses laugh." The last poem will run away with the circus. The last poem will be abducted by space aliens. The last poem will lick its eyebrows and seduce a Martian. The last poem will avoid saying anything obscene just to get on TV. The last poem will wrestle bears and speak of unspeakable things. The last poem will be read by a cyclops. The last poem will return from the astral plane and declare, "Make life beautiful." The last poem will have Charlie Chaplin walk through it. The last poem will step into the post office and see its heart on a wanted poster. The last poem will fight a duel with water pistols. The last poem will lift the blindfold off of justice. The last poem will see angels where there's only clouds. The last poem will give thanks to God and the great penguin. The last poem, of course, will be rejected by publishers. The last poem will be written by a cockroach. The last poem will put condoms on all the missiles. The last poem will laugh as a sword passes through its immaterial body. The last poem, I assure you, will be placed in a government file because secret police everywhere love poetry. The last poem will vote with its feet. The last poem will demonstrate that orange rhymes with door hinge. The last poem will look so far into the future it'll see the back of its head. The last poem will hustle roses down the avenues of the dead. The last poem will be recited by a dim-witted egomaniac with a sardonic smile. The last poem, being timeless, will be disqualified from the poetry contest. The last poem will sound a tuning fork on a grapefruit. The last poem will somersault into the light. The last poem is stored in a piñata. The last poem will smile at the foot of the ladder. The last poem will ride a moose into the sunset, gazing at flowers that whisper love. The last poem, the last poem, the last poem will be written the day after the last day. Deb, deb, deb. That's all, folks. Thank you.
I was going to tell you how to help your kid to just say no to drugs. I'm not going to read you that. But I can tell you how to do that if you want to help your kid. Listen to your kid, then get a rolled up piece of newspaper and beat the drug dealer like he's a dog. That's one way. And I actually did that. It was kind of a good feeling, actually. This is called Yonko the Ditch Digger. I'm just trying to capture a voice, and these people really existed in Pittsburgh. They're gone now, streetcars, lemon blend, World War II, soldiers that march parade on Butler Street, Big Isley's, milkman, junkman, ragman, steel shoe clop, horseshoe-drawn wagons, rags, 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 red sky over J&L, hot steel fell over every part of the Steel City magic, Hungarian church, Polish, Holy Family, Irish Street Fighters, Wally Avenue, Jazz, Juton, German Northside, Tough, Eaton Park Girls, Hopping, Allegheny River Boulevard, Forbes Field, Flipping a Dick, Grote Card, Italian Men Tossing Pennies Against the Pleasure Bar, Chucky Bloom Bloom, Who Smokes Street Cigar Butts, Six Pack Sally with Iron City Beer Cans in her hair, Russian Joe, who stood guard at Fort Wayne, Nummy Camel, who sold papers downtown, who spit on himself when teased, Retardo, who would ride the street merry-go-round and scream, Tokyo Rose, who wore a short red skirt and held up lampposts, Roger Tui, who was the meanest, roughest, toughest son of a bitch in Garfield, gone like Hey Diddle diddle Rogel up the middle, like Yonko from Braddock, who could dig a ditch better than any young stud, pushing heavy orange clay over his head at age 82. Hot summer day, flannel shirt and gray sweat cool cap. He said in his broken Polish way, "You need get strong, Richie. You need push 'em up. Push 'em up, Richie. Make strong, dig better ditch, find strong woman, and do push 'em up. Make smile, push, push, push. Get strong like boot suck mud. You need up, down, Richie. Maybe Polish girl, feel good. Dance polka, drink beer, kabalsa, feel good. Dig good ditch. Red steel sky, Braddock a ghost, time beat cop, and I look around and Yonko was gone. Old movie houses and Saturday morning cartoons."
Thank you. I'm just going to read you just a little piece of this. It's a page. I was on court, and I saw I was at the trial a little bit, and I'm probably going to go back tomorrow. I knew a lot of the officers that were guarding the area, and the kid that did the shooting, I was expecting someone huge. I don't know why I was, but he reminded me of a Pillsbury Doughboy. And I knew his best friend Perkovic, Popolowski. It's terrible. It's just, and I really can't describe it because it's just not shooting of the officers. Is there any police in this room here, or guys that were policemen? It's hard to describe the brotherhood. It really is. Unless you live it. I mean, you've got to really live it in this horrible feeling. It just pales and just covers heavy. And whenever something like this happens, I've been there with them. We've been together. We've been down the alleys. We've been on the porches. We've been not. We never know what's beyond that door. And this sense of immortality, it's crazy, but you believe it. And then this. And then I listened to the officer testify today, how he went over the back fence and he was trying to get into the area, and he was shooting at this, you know. And if you saw yesterday, that feeling of Officer Kelly telling him, you know, tell my child I love her and tell my wife I love her. And the officers holding him, and he'll be okay. But anyway, officers have a certain brotherhood, and I guess it's almost like the Band of Brothers, if you ever watched that movie on TV. Brothers fell like sky. Matter of fact, it's a short piece. I'm going to read it. "A piece of blue sky fell today, and I looked up and saw three shafts of light from the heavens. Blue shards fell like pieces of ash, bright, beautiful blue falling like soft rain, a blue like sadness of a note from a saxophone that cries the blue of lost love, blues like the sound of a bagpipe on a distant hill, notes of the pipes numbing my soul. Pieces of the blue sky fell today, falling on all my brothers and sisters. And I looked at their faces, and there were tears falling, and the tears were blue, and the falling blue shards were heavy and weighed heavy, and I watched my brothers and sisters drag as if they had put their very souls in a sack. I wanted so very badly to gather all the broken blue pieces and get a ladder and repair the holes in the sky. I wanted the ash to quit falling, wanted the blue sky without holes and falling blue ash, and wanted to dry my sisters' and brothers' tears. I wanted sirens and blue lights to stop, wanted silence, wanted the sounds of violence to cease, wanted the raging storms to stop, wanted the falling sound of the brass casings to end, and I wanted to gather all the brass, and I wanted the anguish to stop. I wanted to make a bell, and I wanted to tell all my brothers and sisters to help me make a bell that would ring and silence the agony of the falling blue shards. I wanted to make a bell of the brass casings that would reverb off the hills and great rivers, brass bells ringing, silencing the hammers of hell. A bell that would proclaim, never, never, never again, never again, never again, never again. I looked up at the blue sky, and from the holes fell the most beautiful heavenly light. Thank you.